This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa. JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief at FanDuel and at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 207 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. So the Pittsburgh Steelers aren't in the playoffs. After being 7-2-1 after 10 games, they lost four of their final six games, and they're not dancing as a result. And we've got takes. We've got lots and lots of takes. And I've got them, too. On Wednesday's show, I talked about how team record isn't everything. It is in the sense that it's all that matters for a team when trying to make the playoffs, but it isn't everything when we're evaluating how a team actually performed. And that's key with the Steelers. We can sit and look at their season and say it was a massive failure, and it was. The Steelers are far too talented of a team to not be playing in the playoffs right now. But it's not like they went 5-11, and it's not like they didn't play well throughout the season. According to NumberFire's nerd metric, which tells us how many points a team would be expected to win by against an average one on a neutral field, the Steelers were the ninth best team in football this year. That metric factors in all sorts of things like overall efficiency, point differential, and strength of schedule. If you look at team point differential, the Steelers ranked 11th. Again, they weren't elite, and we can all probably just conclude that they underperformed this year with a ranking of 11th. But they weren't this horrific team. What I found interesting is that their actual performance this year, so again, we're not looking strictly at record, but their actual performance this season wasn't totally far off from what we've seen over the last 4 years when they've made the playoffs. 3 years ago, they had a point differential of 72. That's just 4 points higher than this season. According to Nerd, the Steelers had a rating of 5.01 this year. That means we'd expect them to beat an average team on a neutral field by about 5 points. Last year, that number was 7.2. 2 years ago, it was 1.5. 3 years ago, it was 8.3. And 4 years ago, 3.1. This is all to say that Pittsburgh probably didn't perform all that differently than how they've performed over the last 4 years when they've made the playoffs. So why didn't they make the playoffs? That's really the question everyone seems to be answering this week. I think the most irritating thing about football analysis, and you can probably say this about any sort of analysis, is the black and white thinking that goes into it. The gray area rarely exists. I'm sure I'm guilty of thinking this way at times. I'm sure I simplify things when they shouldn't be simplified. Take the running back value debate. If you've listened to my annoying voice for a while now, you know my stance on running back value. I don't think running backs are very important in real football. Fake football is completely different, but in real football, it's a replaceable position. But simply saying running backs don't matter isn't fair. That's an oversimplification. It's a black and white way of thinking. Running backs can matter. It's just really hard for them to matter consistently year over year and over a long period of time. And I talked about that in a giant study that I did on the position this past offseason over on NumberFire.com. Now, I do think oversimplifying can be okay as long as it's understood that you're talking within context. If someone says running backs don't matter, as long as there's an understanding of context, then there's probably less of an issue. As long as there's an understanding that they don't matter because, for instance, there's an insane supply of them, then fire those running backs don't matter tweets out there. But if we're being literal, obviously I couldn't go run behind the Steelers' offensive line and be effective. So from that standpoint, running backs do matter. But like I said, people are looking for answers as to why the Steelers didn't make the playoffs. This is despite the fact that the team really wasn't all that much different performance-wise than the Steelers teams that we've seen over the last 4 years. And naturally, the easy way to figure out what went wrong is to compare the team from last year to this year. And I think we all know what the obvious difference was, at least from a personnel standpoint. It was Le'Veon Bell. And to many, that single player, Le'Veon Bell, is now the reason the Steelers didn't make the playoffs this year. Go ahead and Twitter search Le'Veon Bell in playoffs and take a look at the results. These takes are out there, and they're out there in full force. But to pinpoint Le'Veon Bell as the key reason Pittsburgh Steelers players are golfing today is really misinformed. In 2018, only the Arizona Cardinals had fewer rushing yards than the Pittsburgh Steelers. Since the media is obsessed with cumulative statistics, this is probably a key reason people think Bell's absence was a big deal. But it's ignoring what actually happened. It's ignoring what did happen. And what did happen was the Steelers threw for over 5,000 yards, and they were 6th in the NFL in yards per play. In 2017, the Steelers ranked 7th in yards per play. In 2016, they were also 7th. In 2015, they ranked 2nd. And what's funny is that in 2015, Le'Veon Bell played fewer than 6 games. If Le'Veon Bell was the reason the Steelers didn't make the playoffs, don't you think we would have seen a drop-off in offensive production? Just some sort of drop-off. Maybe you're sitting there thinking that Bell's absence hurt the Steelers because of time of possession. When you run the ball, you can control the clock. And when you control the clock, your defense gets more rest. Well, first off, Ben Baldwin did a study on Football Outsiders this past offseason on how running the football doesn't equate to defenses getting rest. And I think this notion of clock control has sort of just been driven into our heads as fact without any substantial proof. Because why is it that a team with a good passing attack can't extend drives? If we know that passing is more efficient than rushing, and that's something that's objectively true, then why is it that running the ball is what controls the clock and not sustained drives through the air? But even if you want to make the clock control argument, it's not really there. An average Pittsburgh drive this year ate up 2 minutes and 51 seconds of clock. Last year, it was 2 minutes and 56 seconds. The year before that, 2 minutes and 48 seconds. And the year before that was even worse at 2 minutes and 34 seconds. So this year's time of possession was actually pretty damn good for the Steelers when comparing it to previous seasons. You can even look strictly at the running backs that Pittsburgh used and see that there wasn't an efficiency drop-off at the position this year. Now, yards per carry is a dumb statistic, so I won't go there. But I will tell you that James Conner's 4.5 yards per carry was better than Le'Veon Bell's 4 mark last year. But that's a dumb statistic. I hate that statistic because it needs context. Some context can be found in NumberFire's success rate metric. This metric measures the percentage of positive expected points plays made by a player. If the player provides positive expected points on a play, it's deemed a success. If not, it's a failure. Bell's 2017 success rate was 39.6%. The average across the NFL was 38.1%. In 2018, the NFL average at running back jumped to 41.2%. James Conner's success rate was 44.7%. In other words, Conner outperformed his season's league average by a higher margin than Le'Veon Bell did his. Maybe you're now thinking, well, yeah, Conner didn't face fronts as tough as Le'Veon Bell did. Defenses respect Le'Veon Bell more. Well, according to ESPN's Mike Clay, Pittsburgh faced more men in the box in 2018 than they did in 2017. Conner was even pretty good as a receiver, which is Le'Veon Bell's main differentiator at the position. Conner didn't see the type of volume that Le'Veon Bell did, but he averaged 9 yards per reception and 7 yards per target. Bell has had just one NFL season with 9 or more yards per reception, and he's had just one season with 7 yards per target. How on this planet Earth are we saying Le'Veon Bell's absence is the reason the Steelers didn't make the playoffs? How? James Conner literally outperformed Bell this year from an efficiency standpoint. The Steelers just happen to be more of a pass-heavy team because passing is more efficient than rushing, and Pittsburgh's yards per play didn't change as a result. Are you blaming the season on Le'Veon Bell not being there because Stephen Ridley had a costly fumble against the Saints and Bell would have never fumbled in that situation? Well, first off, if you're going to compare only the bad plays by a Steeler running back to Le'Veon Bell, you can't ignore the good ones. That's not how it works. You want to know what killed the Steelers this year? That play did. But not the result of the play, the ignorant play call itself. It's a 3rd and 2 in a must-win game with your team in opponent's territory with a 4-point lead. And instead of letting your Hall of Fame quarterback drop back to pass, you hand the ball off against a stacked box to your 3rd-string running back who has a history with fumbling problems. That's like me handing my 5-month-old daughter a glass cup while she's sitting in her high chair and expecting her not to break it. You want to know what killed the Steelers this year? Chris Boswell killed the Steelers. NumberFire's expected points model says that Boswell cost the Steelers over 16 points versus an average kicker this year. The Steelers could have easily been an 11-5 team this season if Chris Boswell just makes kicks that he's made over his career. You want to know what killed the Steelers this year? Horrific coaching. Ben Roethlisberger crushed the Raiders' defense in Oakland during their Week 14 game, but the Steelers mismanaged his coming back to the game and they lost as a result. And then there's defensive coordinator Keith Butler's tendency to just not even give a you-know-what about matchups. It's his defense and he'll run his scheme regardless of opponent. And because of that, you get linebackers on Keenan Allen and Keenan Allen goes off against you for 14 catches for 148 yards. You know what else killed the Steelers this year? Laziness with the football. One of the most obnoxious quotes of the entire season was from Xavier Grimble. You remember that Denver game where Grimble was about to score but he fumbled the ball at the inch line through the end zone? After the game, Grimble said, quote, "I would have scored had I held onto the ball. I wanted to run right through him. I was probably too aggressive." You were probably too aggressive? No, you were absolutely too aggressive. When you have a touchdown, you walk into the end zone. You don't invite contact because you're a tough football player who wants to run through another human being. You can look back at nearly all of Pittsburgh's losses this year and find multiple plays that an average team would make that Pittsburgh didn't. Pittsburgh's season wasn't lost because of a running back. It was lost because of a whole multitude of reasons. And Le'Veon Bell's absence is one of the things that honestly did not matter. And what's funny is that if Baker Mayfield converts that 4th down against Baltimore, or if Chris Boswell just makes one of those field goals, or if the Steelers just play Ben Roethlisberger earlier in the second half against Oakland, or if the Steelers don't give up a special teams touchdown to the Chargers, or if they don't commit a pass interference on fourth down against the Saints, if just one of those things happened, we wouldn't even be talking about this. No one would be talking about Le'Veon Bell's impact on this team. Antonio Brown might have even played against Cincinnati. But this is the NFL in football. It's a complex game where many, many things can go wrong in a given season. To pinpoint one singular thing and say, that's why this team failed, when we're looking at a 16-game sample, that's disingenuous. That's lazy. That's oversimplifying things. If you want a firm answer with most things NFL-related, it lives in the gray area. Woo, that felt good to say. I know I've already talked your ear off, but today is a mailbag episode. We've got questions, so let's get to them. This first question is from @NoPickPap. Who's your way too early top five overall next year in fantasy drafts? I think we're looking at five running backs to start drafts next year. And those five, assuming we're talking PPR here, would be Todd Gurley first, probably Saquon second, then Christian McCaffrey, then Zeke, and then Alvin Kamara. But I can see Melvin Gordon finding his way in there. It just really depends on what happens to Mark Ingram this offseason since he's a free agent. But those would be my top five. This next question is from @Chrisimo. Should we be in leagues with a Week 17 championship? No. I will never understand how or why people think this is an okay idea. I get that you're playing one fewer week of fantasy football, but you're also running into the obvious issues of teams resting studs. Remember, good teams make the playoffs, and good teams generally have good offensive players. And good offensive players are fantasy relevant. So each year, we're bound to run into situations where someone like Ezekiel Elliott just doesn't play in Week 17. And how is that fair to the team who has Zeke? It's not. There's no way you can say that's fair. There's just no reason for the most important fantasy game of the season to come down to Week 17 when we get even more unpredictable usage from players, and then we get studs sitting. All it does is increase the luck factor. And I don't think that's what we should be trying to accomplish. This next question is from @MarkHans1. When looking for a positive game script, we always look for, quote, strong home favorites. But since being at home is accounted for when Vegas makes their lines, are we not using home field as a factor twice? Well, you don't need to be at home to have a positive game script. You can be a heavy road favorite and be projected to see a positive game script as well. If we're looking strictly at whether a team is home or away without factoring in anything else, we obviously want to target players who are at home. But if that home team sucks, maybe that home team is the Arizona Cardinals, then we shouldn't assume they're going to see a positive game script. I do think confidence plays a role here, though. Home field advantage is indeed a thing in the NFL, so you may feel more confident if a team is playing at home, regardless of the spread. As in, if you've got two teams who are 10-point favorites, but one of those teams is at home, then you may favor players from that home team. But I think the overall message here is that game script doesn't care if a team is at home or if they're away. We're really looking for strong favorites, not just strong home favorites. This next question is from @VeganFauxPlaise. Please guide me in how I should look to use Geis as an asset this offseason. Should I hold steady? What do you think would be good value for him? Thanks for the content. Looking forward to Draft Twitter getting it wrong again this year while you spit hot fire. I'll get plenty wrong this year too. I'm generally not someone who sells players who are coming off injuries because you're more than likely going to sell at a decreased price. Like right now, I think Devontae Freeman is a good buy. And the same goes for Geis, depending on the price. Most dynasty teams who have Geis probably don't want to get rid of him, though. I think my biggest worry with Darius Geis at this point is honestly the quarterback position in Washington. Alex Smith has had issues since his awful leg injury, and his career has been put into question. I don't think Alex Smith is some elite passer by any means, but he's better than what most rookie quarterbacks would be or what most free agent quarterbacks would be. So that's definitely a concern. But I don't know if Geis is someone that you'd want to sell coming off this injury. He's a talented back with a strong profile that I liked a good bit coming out. This next question is from @Brandon_Kaiser1. Who's your favorite player to watch in the NFL and why? This one's easy for me. It's DeAndre Hopkins. He's so smooth, but he'll make some of those unbelievable catches that shouldn't be made by a human being. He's awesome. And he plays offense, and offense is more fun to watch than defense. This last question didn't have a ton of questions. I understand why. It's the start of the offseason. But this last question is from @TPF421. How do you feel about streaming when a league charges a transaction fee? My league charges $2 per transaction, so if you stream and don't win, it can be costly. Without knowing what your buy-in is and whether or not the type of money is significant or not, I'm going to answer this similarly to how I answer most of these types of questions. You've got to adjust. You may have to reach a little bit higher for a quarterback during your draft, and then you've probably got to look further ahead than just that particular week's matchup for your defense. That's probably the biggest key, to be honest. You'll have to look further ahead and sometimes sacrifice better matchups from waiver wire players because you don't want to spend the fee. But you've got to adjust in these situations. You don't have to stream in every league. To be honest, I don't stream in every league. At least I don't at quarterback and tight end. But adjusting is the answer here. You have to adjust. That's going to do it for today's show. Thanks to all you guys for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify. And I'm also on Twitter, @LateRoundQB. And remember, guys, you can send your mailbag questions to that Twitter handle, or you can email me at jj@numberfire.com. Don't be scared to send those questions in. Thanks, everyone. I'll talk to you next week.